You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Leonardo Madriz. Leonardo, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we're going to talk about the show, Do Not Be Afraid, which I really liked. And of course, we're talking about your sculptures in the show and more. But let's start with the title. You know, I need to hear that. maybe that's part of it. You know, we all need to hear that. But can you tell me where it came from for you?
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things that just kind of settled in and was like, I have to call it this. I guess I like that it gives multiple readings. For one, there certainly just were in troubled times. I think we all feel like a heightened sense of awareness around that. But then I also, I don't know, I have enough of a spiritually engaged life to think that, you know, the world will do what it needs to do. We're these kind of beautiful, tiny, profound blips in the overall existence of things, and you know, everything will carry on. This too shall come to pass, kind of idea. So that's one element of just a larger sentiment of kind of societal existential dread we're going through, and sort of this assurance of, you know, love and beauty exists in the world, and we should put our faith in that. The other sort of reading with it came regarding some of the works in the show, which I started titling Sentinels. And that I honestly feel kind of came out of nowhere too. I'm the kind of artist that does believe there's kind of, you know, we have a lot of critical thought that goes into all of the works that we do, but there's also kind of just things in the air that we pick up on. And that sort of happened with the process of making these sculptures, where I made one of the pieces in the show, Sentinel Adorned in the Lever's Wake. That was the first of the series. And when I made that one, I was just looking at it and kind of taken by the scale, and especially seeing it in the dark, where it's got a very particularly warm glow that gives this kind of, you know, firelight, candlelight sort of ambiance to it. And this word came to me, and sentinel means one who keeps watch. A guard, essentially, comes from the Latin sentire, to feel, or to keep vigil. And sort of in tandem with exploring these works, I was spending some time, based on other work that I'd been making, really examining the kind of Western, you know, predominant monotheistic origin story, the Judeo-Christian Abrahamic origin story. And we have these angel figures in those texts, and they always appear and they seem frightening, but they always declare, do not be afraid. And so I like this idea with a show that's loaded with themes of refuge to kind of invoke this notion of, you know, there are guards and there will be refuge.
Yeah, I do love hearing that. And it's true that is a kind of... I mean, as you're saying, your practice and your thinking revolves or is in part informed by these kind of ancient truths, right? Which is, you know, the way that was invoked, the way you just talked about it, coming from an angelic source or not, but the do not be afraid is this kind of this wisdom or this call from on high, right? That in a sense is the best aspects of religion or theological pursuits, right? To some extent, that seems like a gem in there, the pearl that they're all reaching for.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and there's a consideration too with some of the, at least for me, when I first started making them, some of the forms working with the rope and the rebar kind of pointed me towards glyphs, and it started making me think of like really ancient art, like old art. And I was considering as well how the origins and roots of art really came out of these very kind of ritual object oriented, you know, spiritual ritual oriented purposes. So there's also that kind of association stirring for me in terms of.
And which works were those in the show? Is there a specific work? You were just talking about Sentinel Adorned, but there was the one you're talking about now is something else, right?
Sentinel Adorned, and then the Sentinel of Lacrimosa Guerrero, the kind of larger centerpiece towards the back of the gallery. I think that one as well, I think, brought similar readings, especially because of kind of more involved use of rope. As you'll see throughout all of the works in the show, there's a lot of intricate rope work where I got really sort of fascinated by the material and all these different possibilities and utilities of knots, and it's such a wide world, you know, the different functions and the kind of weird names that they give, and they have their own sort of poetic language around that. But as I started thinking of these sort of mythic associations, I also, you know, did a little research and became mindful of rope as being a very ancient technology, and actually having a lineage of spiritual use through different practices like Japanese Shinto, the Zitsi in Judaism, and a variety of kind of indigenous sacrificial sort of binding purposes. All of those readings were in mind as I started working on those two pieces in particular that have more involved rope work.
And did that also include, there was a piece, I don't know the title of it, that had a knife in it?
That's the same one in question, Lacrimosa.
Black, the title of that is
It's Sentinel of Lacrimosa Guerrero.
And so let's talk about how these come together. Sentinel of Lacrimosa Guerrero. These are really unusual materials you're using here, right? These are almost all luminous, but there's rope and glass and more in here. How are these built? Do they come from sketches, or how are these built? Because it seems like such an unusual medium that has a number of stages, right?
Yeah, so I would say mock-ups are probably the biggest kind of driving force. So actually just taking some of the material before it's been shaped, but just kind of hanging things in place for some time and sort of observing how weight will shift things and looking at, you know, if I raise this material and kind of imagine it in this place. But it's also a dance back and forth between drawings. And then in some cases, these works are very, they lean more into assemblage than, you know, a full kind of sculptural material transformation. And because of that assemblage nature, there's a lot of different, you know, components or pieces that make up each piece. So sometimes it's also, I'll have an idea rolling, and then I'll think about one assemblage piece that I want to integrate into it, and then I'll start to work on that, and then just the physicality of that, seeing how things look, will then lead to rearranging things, which is certainly the case with that piece that you just referenced, where the knife was in place well before I ever came up with the idea of having the knife pierce these camo neck gaiters. I threw the knife in because I liked this idea of these kind of like warrior protectors, you know, so I wanted something that felt a little frightening. And then, you know, kind of struck me later, I think, like what had to be going through the knife, or the knife going through, rather.
Well, and in these, I mean, talking about them as sentinels and also you just mentioned kind of warriors, they seem to be sort of stand-ins for figures, right? These are figurative in one way, right? As sentinels, they feel like these are potentially entities. Well, maybe that's not a figure, but a kind of entity that we're dealing with, an entity that is, you know, in a sense that can talk to one another, at least within the show, right? They're having a dialogue to some extent, but do you see them that way as entities, or as even talismans to some degree that have a certain kind of power on their own that's more than aesthetics.
Absolutely. I really do see them that way, though I think I have been wrestling with the figurative reading itself, because I don't want them, when we say figurative, we so often are implying human figure, you know? And I'm certainly, I came out of a painting background, you know, that word has such baggage, but I think entity feels appropriate, or thinking of guards, and then they even hang, you know, in very kind of column-like structures. So there is also this kind of just confronting scale to them that I think, yeah, is really important to what they are.
And so what
If that
are they
answers your question, yeah.
exactly? It does, but no, it does. But then, you know, though they're not figures or you know, in that strict sense where we think of figures as a human form, I was talking about entities, kind of ethereal forms that, you know, like talismanic forms that in some way have a type of energy or a type of healing power or a type of spell or something like that, something that's about what is, you know, non-material, non-physical, but is intended to cast some kind of spell, for lack of a better word, that is that we can't define. I mean, I'm reaching
Yeah.
there probably, so if it's not
No,
that, just say no, I'm in the wrong
actually.
direction.
No, I think you're spot on. I call them offerings above all else. It's what makes the most sense to me. Everything you said is deeply resonant with the thinking behind them. And I think entity, in the way that you said, like ethereal, you know, that kind of entity, I think, is in line with the spirit of these. You know, maybe I'm thinking of the work of someone like Elaine Cameron Weir. You know, it's like that same kind of, there's clearly a presence laid in, but it's there's definitely a kind of otherness that's being spoken about.
Well, I like the idea of offerings, as you're saying, which you've talked about before. Yeah, and it's interesting. Yeah, Elaine Cameron Weir, of course, her work also has a kind of, you know, a structure that seems to be designed almost in the way that we're discussing here as potentially a type of offering, something almost religious about it. But let's talk about the word offering, that seeing them as an offering. Sounds like it does have a type of power, right? We light a candle as an offering in a perhaps in a church or something, and that's intended to make something happen, right? To send something to someone who's no longer living, or to literally create a miracle, rain to come when there is none, or war to end, something like that, right? Or tell me what you're thinking by offering. That is the associations that come to mind for me.
Yeah, no, those are great associations. I would add to that offerings of mourning, offerings of supplication, of submission, you know, to the notion, simply, you know, without making it too, you know, neo-spiritual or religious, simply an offering to the reality of existing in a cosmos that is much larger and more profound than us. And I think that we as human beings, you know, it's actually this need to hold things sacred, which is, you know, doesn't have to be God necessarily. It can be even just the way our relationship to science, but like holding things that are beyond our scope as sacred and making a space to honor that, I think is ingrained in us. It was, you know, it kind of emerged all over the world, every society, and with forms that had yeah, just really similar, you know, types of resonance and ritual and altars and you know, the whole lot of that. So I think of them as offerings in that manner, both maybe as a plea for some kind of, you know, if there could be divine intervention into all of this, sure, let's bring it on. But at the least, just to honor, you know, our place in the world.
And I love that. I mean, that seems to also be something new, as much as it's, of course, ancient, right? In the art world, you know, for the last, I don't know what, 50 years, 30 years, 20 years, you know, things of the spirit, things of that you're talking about, weren't discussed as much as they are now, right? There seems to be more of that. There seems to be some kind of an opening, right? As opposed to talking about things only in formal terms, you know, that now we can talk about things not only in expressive terms, but as you're articulating, something that's sort of between worlds, that also is about a world that's something that we know nothing of and was often sidelined by the art world, but doesn't seem to be as much anymore. I mean, strangely enough, that it was sidelined at some point. French theorists and academia is really what I'm thinking of, that didn't give that much attention, but now that seems to be something, there's a shift, right, that you're part of.
Yeah, I think so, which I personally feel very excited about. I think everyone's a bit exhausted on the over-politicization of all art. Not to say that that stuff isn't important. I actually think that the role of political objectives is actually deeply meaningful and powerful in driving ideas and pushing them towards other agenda. But I do think that when it comes to, like, what, you know, I've been thinking a lot about how art does many things always. Any decent work of art is doing many things at once. But of the things that art does well, I've been really questioning this notion of the tool of critique and how functional it is at that versus this other kind of primary purpose, which is kind of conduit of mysterious transmissions. And right now I feel excited that I'm seeing it more and more in the art world through various outlets and through very different perspectives. It's exciting.
It is. And there's another work in here I'd like to talk about a little bit before we go. Down is the new up. That's something quite different from the others in some respects, right? And what we're talking about, this also does have a specific political reference to it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And I think this one is, this is one of the first ones in this direction where I started exploring integrating illumination into these assemblages. And so that's a little bit of why it's something other within the whole body of work in the show. But I think also it may be, it's a nice leading, you know, it's at the front of the gallery. It sort of sets you up to the most kind of the moment, more political and socio-political kind of things that we're wrestling with. And then the works kind of lead you back towards this other kind of more spiritual side as you progress. And this piece specifically, you know, is really dwelling on notions of nationhood, social mobility, kind of the failed promises of the American dream, and suburban ideals, you know, really highlighting that those ideas that we put so much stock into just aren't working for us. You know, so the two most loaded items in that piece are the hem of an American flag that's been illuminated, which hangs kind of noose-like. It could be a collar or a noose or a necklace. You know, read it how you want, but it clearly kind of leaves that neck-like space within it. And from there dangles this counterfeit Rolex, which I purchased on Canal Street, which of course is kind of a hub for immigrant labor, undocumented immigrant labor specifically. oriented around this kind of, silly American convention of putting on appearances, pretending to be of a higher status than you are. And then that's followed by a messed up door threshold, which kind of conjures a Mobius strip, which is, of course, a non-orientable surface. So it's really commenting on this sort of like, we've put so much stock into something that isn't working for us, that isn't actually leading us anywhere.
Yeah, thanks for talking about this and spending time with me so far. For the listeners, of course, there's links here to learn more, and also I hope you can go see the show before it closes on May 2nd of this year. I want to ask you one more question before we go a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
Oh yeah, good question. I'm kind of juggling a few things at the moment, between audiobooks and real books. Some are very, I have to kind of really squeeze things in between, but studio time and day job, et cetera. But I'm always taking in a little bit of theory, kind of in bite-sized chunks. And at the moment, that is All Incomplete by Stefano Harney and Fred Moten, as well as been listening to a few audiobooks of Byung-Chul Han, right now kind of going through the Burnout Society, which pairs rather well with Moten and Harney's work, kind of really criticizing this very production-oriented modern condition that we live in. But I also like taking things in and influences in that are not so obvious art theory oriented. So another thing that I'm sitting with right now that's been really impactful is this book called Come of Age by Stephen Jenkinson, who is a Canadian writer, teacher, and grief worker. And it's this kind of diagnosis of the modern Western condition, lacking elderhood within our social structures anymore. We have plenty of old people, but no elders. And sort of this idea of like what that role is, what those forms of guidance served, and what do you do when you have to start from a point of impoverishment in a society to reintegrate that. But also for a little bit of playfulness, I'll plug in a book that I just picked up a couple weeks ago that I'm also reading here and there. It's my end note. It's called Same Day by Sarah Ann Wallen, who's a dear friend of mine. It's a book of poetry published by UDP Press. And it's just really beautiful, lyrical observations from daily life with playful, repetitive structures that will kind of throw you for a loop. And they're full of both existential dread and beauty.
Thanks so much for sharing that. Those all sound like great books. And yeah, particularly that last one by Sarah Ann Walden. I want to thank you so much, Leonardo, for talking to me today. I wish you well with the show. Again, listeners, there's links here to learn more. Go see the show. But Leonardo, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.